We've been friends a long time. We can discuss anything, right?
Sure, bud.
Well, I have an issue.
No kidding. You cheer for Boston.
An issue down there?
Hey, half of all guys experience erectile dysfunction. Heard of Felix? Felix connects you to a doctor for an assessment. No appointment, no pharmacy visit, no awkward conversations. Treatment is delivered discreetly to your door.
Sounds great.
I just wish you'd be more discreet about wearing that Boston jersey in Toronto.
Go to felix.ca/drive to start your online visit.
Well, that's the end of the road for Canada and Qatar. That's the end of it. And after all that buildup, all that hype, in the end, we got ourselves a goal. In fact, we got two. The second one was an own goal. Yeah, that's a distinction. First time in the World Cup this year that there's been an own goal, and Canada owns that. So I think that's worthy of something. But
what's a hazy B one word to describe that tournament for Canada?
Disappointing. Disappointing. Absolutely. For sure. They lost all three games. You know, like we were hoping for a draw, hoping for a win. And the fact is they played really well against Belgium, and then beyond that, it was downhill from
and
there.
Don't right? do me a favor, Hazy and Noodles. Don't give me the old, look at Belgium. They're going home. Look at other quality teams. They didn't make it through. Don't do that one. Wow. I don't like that one.
No, but it just, I'm the other way. I had zero expectations going in. Mm-hmm. Every soccer person, a lot more knowledgeable about soccer than me, because I call it soccer other than football, they were saying they'll be lucky to score a goal in this against those three opponents. They got two goals. They pretty much, I think if we had, you know, somebody sat down in a room and you said, tell us what's going to happen in these three games, they would have predicted all three losses, I would suggest.
Probably. I mean, it's easier to say it now because we've been through it, for sure.
Right.
Again, against Belgium, they outperformed them. They should have won that, but it doesn't matter. It's not about should have. Yeah. You got to actually follow
moral
through.
Moral victories, no.
But Croatia, you know, was a landslide, and today they had a really quality second half, but it started, I mean, that first goal they gave up, Warion, I don't know what the hell he was doing.
Dude, that was Joe from the bridge in the net, right?
That was, did you see him turn left? You could sense he's panicking. He's like,
what, the crop duster left turn move where he was just trying to get it back on the rails? No way, dude.
That left turn was so panic-inducing.
Yeah, because from the bridge, if you can just get us the left turn, it's after the giveaway, correct?
Yes, Borjan gives it right up the pipe, and then he's like, uh-oh, I got to turn this rig around.
I'm in one right now.
I'm in big trouble. And he was kind of he's like, I'm not getting back.
Yeah, dude,
like,
he was a runaway truck on an interstate in the States being chased by the cops, and when he sees him, he starts turning that big rig, and it's like, this is not going to end well.
Not working. Not going to happen, and it's in the back of the net. And credit to Morocco, they end up winning the group, you know, with Belgium and Croatia in the group. So Croatia's going on, Morocco's going on, Canada's coming home. More on that throughout the afternoon. And listen, the one thing you can take out of it was fun. It was a build-up. There was a lot of anticipation for the first two games, for sure. And we get to do it again on home soil in 4 years, right? They're back in it the next time it happens, and it's going to be in Canada, which if you thought this was special, it'll be 100 times that, 1,000 times that. When it's
they need to have a better showing, flat out.
They do,
in home country, like this isn't, you can't go home with a participation badge 4 years from now.
That's
right. They've got work to do here, and the standard has been set. I think they can see where the measuring stick is and how much work they have to do. But there's some great young players there. They've got to continue to develop the next 4 years and be, you know, a force to be reckoned with 4 years from now. But
you're
that's
right.
not going to be easy. That's not going to be easy.
No, it's not going to be easy. But you're right. It's going to feel kind of like when you host an Olympic Games. It's like you got to be prepared to show up when you're the host. You
right.
know, and
but how are you going to do that? How do you ensure that there's like two 18-year-old Alphonso Davies right now?
You can't.
That are going to be in 4 years ready to step in and be a difference maker like him. I guarantee you that it's impossible to predict that, and probably impossible to happen.
Yeah. Like, it's not as if in 4 years they're going to be Brazil. Like, we got to be realistic. Like, that's not going to happen. Right. But in 4 years, could they be Morocco? You know, could they be – look at Costa Rica, what they've done. Japan's gotten through. Like, these are not, like, the world powers, the 6 to 8 to 10 world powers that find a way to get through. The Americans are through, right? Can you get to the same level as the Americans? Can you get a good draw? Can you pick up a win and another point somewhere and sneak through? I don't think anyone's suggesting they're going 3-0 in 4 years and cruising into the knockout stage. But you're right. I mean, you got to be realistic. The players, whatever we've got is what we've got. You know, like, it's not as if some 5-year-old's going to start playing now and he can help in 2026. That's not the way it's going to work.
I always wondered if you could speed up the process by maybe finding somebody and getting them a Canadian passport.
Well, that does happen all the time, right? With international soccer.
That's what I mean. Like, you know, is that skirting the system?
A lot of that is politicking, Noodles. A lot of it is selling your program. Like, the Moroccan keeper was born in Montreal. Right. And, you know, like, that. A lot of it is Astakio had the option to play for multiple countries. You know, like, you got to get to the guys and be like, listen, can you come play for us? Like,
that seems so greasy, though. Like, if you're a true.
You see it all the time.
You're an American or a Canadian, and you're starting to get greasy with where I'm going to do this. I find that so greasy. And I obviously wouldn't complain about it. Wasn't Brett Hall, like, mixed, and he decided to play with the States
because
he had a beef? Yeah, he had a beef. I think he got. Didn't even get invited to some.
He got cut from the World Junior, so it's like, the hell with you. I'm going to the U.S. side.
And there's probably, with the amount of Canadian guys that went to the NHL and have an American citizen, like Jake Sanderson, both of his parents are born in Edmonton.
They're from St. Albert. I went to high school with them.
Yeah, and he grew up. It was weird seeing him, like, in the American program. I'm like, no way, man.
Well, yeah. I mean, Jake Sanderson was born in, I think, in their summer home in Montana, just across the border. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be the equivalent of going to Muskoka, like going north in people in Calgary.
Dude, I find that so bizarre how you're like, your parents are full-blooded. Like, my daughter, she was born in Boca Raton, Florida. She's American. And I'm like, how's that even possible?
Because you were golfing when you retired. That's
right. I know, but I'm like, you're not American. As soon as she reminds me of that sometimes, like, just talking about passports, she's like, I just use my American passport. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you're American.
That's pretty wild, though, that she is.
Did you see the note from Joe from the Bridge? It's true. Willie Nylander was born in Calgary.
That's right. William Nylander could be on Team Canada if he wanted to. Like, he's passed on that, obviously. And
you've got to get the passport and all that. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I know, and I'm kind of half tongue in cheek joking, but I'm like, you can't find a ringer and be like, wink, wink. Hey,
it's
like,
a big part of it.
Come on to Canada here. We've got Canadian Tire sponsorship for you or something like that.
Yeah, we need Team RBC to get to Mbappe.
Give them the Stamkos meeting.
Exactly.
Fire
that's what I was
Stamkos
thinking.
Meeting.
The Stamkos meeting where it's like, you know, like you're in Gino Reto be in the parking lot. There'll be all these agents and stuff coming through. Like, I think it would be kind of funny.
That
all
would
of
be
a sudden,
hilarious.
One of
the
best
Imagine
players
calling
in the world.
The best players in Europe and just say, hey, we need you. We got John Torrey, Canadian Tire. We got everything set up for you. We want to have a little sit down, and all we need is for you to announce to the world that you're actually Canadian now, and that it would be great. You know, I think that is a way of circumventing the system. Just go out and find Canadians to start playing.
It'd be embarrassing, though, if you put like the Gino Reda camera on the front door and you were having open auditions who wants to play for Canada, and some 300-pound mooses with soccer cleats on were wheeling up and trying to get something started. It's like, not you, guy. Yeah. Not you.
You got to weed that. You need security at the door.
Call through this a little bit here. You're right about William Nylander. He's born in Calgary. Wouldn't that
be something?
I forgot
about that.
If Willie flipped and was like, you know what, I'm going to play for Canada in the future. And I'll tell you who would definitely be on Canada if there was a World Cup this year, and that would be Mitch Marner.
Yeah.
Mitch would be high up the lineup, and he'd be a guy, he'd be expected to make an impact. Because that's what he's doing night in, night out. And last night was different. It was actually shades of Matthews scoring 50 last year. It was the same thing. Remember, Matthews scored his 50th against Winnipeg in an empty net.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I remember that because I knew multiple people in the building. My neighbor was in the building. My dad was in the building. My mom and my dad were in the building last night. So I was like, it's chasing history. You know, I was thinking about the people in the building. It's like, you got to find them the point. And when Engvall scored,
I thought it was the empty net.
Empty net, exactly. It was like, thankfully for Mitch and for the opportunity, they scored because you knew the Sharks were going to pull the goalie, and then it's just leave Marner out there for 2 minutes.
I was the other way, guys. I thought it was going to overtime, and him 3-on-3, they were going to get their first overtime win of the year. And it was going to be him.
Noodles, the way that it's been going in OT, I understand the empty net, I was like, he legitimately has an opportunity now.
You put an oxygen
and
tank on him.
And you stay out on the ice for 2.5 minutes. And when he missed that first one, I was like, no way, man. You're going to go down like that?
No, the and second one, when he passed it. When he passed it, I think people were like, what is going on there? Like, I get that you're being, I mean, you could pass it, but like, just take the shot.
Yeah.
Just take the shot at that point. And I know we can, in hindsight, we can joke about it now because he was able to get it. But, like, can you imagine today we're talking about it? And, you know, this is a selfish thing. You know, it's a record. It's something that's really cool. But when he passed it and it was picked off, I think, by Barabanov in the middle of the ice, I was like, oh, my God. If he doesn't get this and they go back down and they end up winning 2-1 and he doesn't get it because he passed it, like, I was thinking, like, that's an opportunity. There's a difference between being non-selfish and being a passer and being like, this is important. Like, fire that into the net. And I even think Mitch said, like, my dad's going to be pissed at me, or my dad's going to make a joke about, like, hey, why didn't you fire the second one or whatever type of
thing. Well, and also, clearly it was the better option to score.
Exactly.
You know, he tried to force it and it got picked off. If he didn't, I mean, he had a step or two where he could have got even closer into the slot and likely guaranteed a goal. But in the end, he gets it. You know, I thought the fans gave him the salute that he deserves. 18 games in a row with a point is incredible. It really is.
It's awesome, man.
Yeah, it's just an amazing run. And the way his teammates handled it, I think he's been handling it really well, talking about it daily. He's in the limelight. Like right now, it's the Mitch Marner show. That's what it is. And he deserves all the spotlight he's getting. Because I think what he said after the game about being a local guy, understanding the history, you know, knowing of Olchuk, which, you know, is something he obviously would know of growing up as a Leaf fan living in Toronto. It's right there on a platter for him to just keep rolling, you know, and just keep writing history. And I think, you know, putting the playoffs aside, because that's the hurdle and that's the final thing to rewrite. You know, Matthews is already rewriting a lot of the record books. Yeah. And Marner's right there with him. And these guys are going to be deserving of all those records if they stay here for a long time and they keep playing at this pace with how good they've been, drafted, developed, been rock stars since day one.
Dude, they're getting statues out front of the building.
That's right. Now, again, you got to have the playoff success to get there. Like, you have to. That it goes without saying. You have to get there. But in terms of regular season success, like, they're playing themselves up the list of greatest Leafs of all time. Like, it feels like every game, you know, like every 20 games, every 40 games, you stop and look around, and you're like, man, Matthews just passed that guy, Mitch passed that guy, Willie's passing this guy. You know, that's where they're going, and that's what they've done. And they're healthy, they play every night, and they perform every night.
Yeah, no, that's the truth. And like you say, in the regular season, they've written themselves a really nice story so far. Now they just need to, you know, continue the legacy into the playoffs. You can't do that in November. December 1st now. But they had a great November. That's going back. Is it November's they've been really sharp in the last 3 or 4 years?
They've been dominating November's. They just got 25 of a possible 30 points in November.
That's a month that puts you in the playoffs, basically.
Yeah.
Well, unless you have an absolute. But they did do that 1 year.
They did it last year.
The 1 year they got Keith, they did it, and they kind of went in the tank in January again, but we're not going to dwell on that. That happened, though, didn't it?
They had ups and downs when, Sheldon took over, they took off, and then COVID hit. But last year, remember, I was referencing this at the start of the month, that Jack Campbell's stats were insane last November. Remember, he had
a
950 save percentage or something. He went 12-2 or so. It was crazy what he was doing.
He was cooking that month.
He was cooking. He was cooking that month.
Sam,
but
like
guess what?
These guys.
That's what these guys have done. Like, Samsonov was outstanding last night. And Murray's been great.
That game could have looked different. You know, like, was it three breakaways they give up in the first?
Right off the bat.
10 minutes.
Like, you take one, you have one.
But Noah Gregor, like, I don't know how you feel about this, though. Like,
Noodles, Greg Simpson showed the shots, and there's no disrespect to those guys, but they were like flick shots that hit the glass.
Well, the one, is it Luke Kunin? Like, Luke Kunin, like, goes to flick it, it rolls into the corner. Noah Gregor misses by, like, 3 feet on a shot. I'm like, luckily, I mean, I thought Samsonov was in really good position for him, and he made a really good right pad save, I think, on the first opportunity. But, like, you know, you got to find a way if you're San Jose, because I thought the Leafs started slow and kind of like, we'll see how this unfolds type of thing.
But that's something that's a little bit different, Noodles. I think sometimes in the past, that start would have ended up being a 5-0 loss at times because of goaltending, because of just, I don't know, where they were at mentally. I don't know. It just seems like maybe they understand that they can recover from a bad first period like that and still buckle down and get to their game and get the 2 points. Not always been.
Well, it's never going to be. It's never going to be. Sorry to interrupt. It's never going to be a perfect oil painting every night. Like,
no.
Sometimes it's just going to be
win
ugly
a bunch
and
of different ways.
Exactly. And they found a way. You know, Engvall gets, what, his third of the season. Like, he's a guy that I'm a little hard on just because I think he plays really shy. But he did a good job.
That was
job
a nice play, though, to get that puck up off the ice. That was a nice play.
Yeah, and Hayes, you really talked about the goaltending. You guys know I'm a little bit crazy when it comes to my thoughts and ups and downs. Like, their goaltending scenario, I don't think since I've been doing this job I've ever kind of completely flipped my emotions when it comes to a position. It wasn't long ago I was like, how are they even going to get into the playoffs with this goaltending setup? Now I'm like, they got some serious depth in goaltending. They got depth in net. They got Schalgren down in the minors, who's like a legit backup goalie. I'm just like, that's what I went from as just an analyst and as just a regular Toronto guy. I have never flipped a switch on one particular subject with the Toronto Maple Leafs as I have with goaltending. And things could change. It could go south. But I was at a point where I'm like, with this, how are they? Like, when Murray was hurt and then Samsonov on that breakaway blew his leg out, I'm like, how did they even get in the playoffs?
Well, and the team wasn't, you know, at their best. So that's, you're also looking at that. But they found a way through adversity to knuckle down, and the team protects the goaltender, and the goaltender makes the saves they should. The other thing, too, is we had to see how these guys were going to perform. It was 1 year ago, calendar year, that Matt Murray was on waivers. You know, it was like legitimately, I'm not lying. It was end of November that he played. It was that blowout game and it didn't go well for him. And they put him on waivers and they're like, hey, we're going to have a reset for you. And, you know, Samsonov still had a good win-loss record with Washington, but Washington said, we're going to part with both of our goaltenders. Samsonov is 7-2 for the Leafs and Vanacek has been unbelievable for New Jersey.
In Jersey, yeah, that's
and,
right.
And Rocco, you call him Rocco, in Washington, he's been just okay. I think I love Darcy Kuemper. I think he's a good goaltender, but I think he's taking time to settle in, and it hasn't been his best. So, you know, it's been revolving chairs. The goaltending has been rock solid, regardless who's
it's
played.
It's the definition of stability. I mean, that's the position that can offer it to you for every team. Right, it's pitching, it's goaltending, it's quarterbacking. If you get elite production from those positions, it quiets everything down. It allows for everything to be elevated, and it puts you in a position to win. You know, more than anything, and that's ultimately what's going on here with the Leafs is they're winning every night. They're winning. They got 25 of 30 points in November. Mm-hmm. That's a phenomenal month, like phenomenal. They're third overall in the league. You know, I mean, that's how well they've played. And it's a credit to them. They had a poor start to the season, but it's irrelevant now. It's completely irrelevant what happened the first 10 games of the year because they washed it out. They just said, forget October. We're good. We're vets. We're going to be fine. And they've been driven by their big boys. Like the way they play, they're playing with confidence. They're playing a style that's evidently very successful in terms of getting production and finding a way to get points. But Marner's been outstanding. You know, Matthews again last night, Tavares, Willie, the goaltending. I mean, it's crazy that they're winning all these games or getting through this month. We're not even talking about Riley and Brody. Like, how often would those two guys come up if it was tire fire season right now. Like if they had just lost their third in a row and last night it was 7-5 and you're like, man, they can't defend or anything.
Yeah, and some people are getting a little bit, they're getting the crazies, what I call the crazies in the grocery store. I got one an hour before we went up. Maybe we move away from those guys that aren't playing right now.
No, bud,
you don't even start with that. You don't fall in love with Mac Holloway and Victor Mete. Like, as a pair, like, it's a nice story. It's fun right now. But please stop with that nonsense asking me in public moving on from other people that aren't there right now. It's silliness.
No. The guy who has held up for me and is Gio. 20 plus minutes a night. I think it's been 10 games in a row. And did I read that stat wrong? Like, this is a guy who's literally been doing it every night at 39.
He's been playing so well.
Yeah. 39 years old. I don't know. I don't want him playing 82 games this year at 20 plus minutes. I think I'd like to see him 16 to 18, but I think he's a guy who, you know, understood the magnitude of when to step up. Great leader, great human, all of that. We all love Gio. But, like, he's been rock solid.
He's been really good. But I think Sandin's been a lot better as the season's gone on. I think he had a really rocky start, and he's had some fires pop up, self-inflicted fires, for sure. But I think he's been better. Lilligren, Hall, like, the top four has really been solid, you know. And I think the forwards deserve a lot of credit. Goalies deserve a lot of credit. We mentioned that. It's not going to be Mete and Holloway that comes in and actually fills in the production of those two guys that you're missing. It's going to be the whole team and everyone compensating, and that's what's happened. So the Leafs with a win last night. The Raptors, they got crushed down in New Orleans. I tell you, we got to give some love to Zion. Like, we talked about him a lot last year. Street clothes. I mean, he didn't play last year. Yeah. He was just hanging out. He shot
some 80%, hops last night, dude.
80% from the field last night.
They had no answer for that dude.
Nothing.
He was picking up steam. He was like, it was like Shaq.
He's
in his
a beast
prime
when he can play. When he
That's
can play,
it.
Like when he's plays, healthy, he can play.
He had, like, he went off for 33 and I think 10 last night or 11. He had a double double and he, like, 80% from the field, 33 points with ease. And to your point, when he's hopping and he's moving, man, it's tough to stop. Yeah. Like, the talent is there, the dominance is there. It's just a matter of whether or not he can stay on the court.
Dude, it wouldn't shock me if in 10 days it said, IR.
Well, that's the nature of the beast, you know, with him and like with other guys in the NBA. You know, Ben Simmons is on it right now. He's not playing. You know, Kawhi, there's certain guys, it's just it flares up. Anthony Davis. Let's hope that's not the case, because when Zion's playing, man, it's a blast to watch him, even if it's on the wrong side of where the Raptors are at, and that's what happened last night. So more on the Raps, the Leafs. Team Canada, we got a big Thursday nighter tonight. The Bills in New England playing Belichick and the Pats. Ooh. We'll tee that up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Bills, Pats tonight. We'll get into that into the next hour. Carlo's going to join us because he wants to talk about his Bills. And ask him also about the Leafs and Mitch Marner and Steve Tasker coming up. That's who we really need to talk to the Bills about, Steve. But we'll let Carlo throw his Bills helmet on and yell about the Bills. This is a big one tonight for both teams. You know, Bills are going to the playoffs anyway, but the Pats might need this win to stay on pace, you know, to make the playoffs. And it's your pick tonight. That means Al's brother will be joining us. I wonder what kind of tie he'll be wearing when he joins us in a couple of hours.
My question is, I wonder if he kept that one
or
the other. Like, did he assume that as his own?
I hope so. I hope he
did. And he could have, because it was basically in a trash bin in the green room.
It might have been one of Duffy's old ties,
dude,
that he just cut up and left behind. I don't know.
There is, like, it's about 12 different items of things. There's, like,
it's a
Randy River pair of slackers, an old pair of, like Mandel brown shoes, and brutal ties, and a Kenneth Cole dress shirt.
Yeah.
That has, like, dirty collar on it from 1990.
it's
a sad state of affairs down there. And this guy wheeled
really
in there and thought that was my dressing room.
That's Al's brother's dressing room.
That's the best part, is he thought it was your dressing room. Like, geez, O-Dog, you're not taking care of your clothes. They're laying on the floor. There's shirts in there, I guarantee you, from Gino Retta 20 years ago. Like, that's basically what it is. I've seen
it.
That nonsense.
Yeah, I've been through there, too. It's... It's basic. Like, if anyone left behind a piece of clothing they cared about, they'd circle back to go get it, right?
Yeah. Like, if somebody flew in and had to do one hit in Studio 6 and they left a dirty pair of grubby shoes, they would be put in there like someone was coming back for them, and they're not. They're there to die. It's where things go to die in there.
And Al's brother had it on.
Al's brother went in there sifting through looking for a tie, and he found one, though. Like, he said that the tie was perfect. Like, it was a match for the jacket and the shirt and everything. So
it was.
That's great.
Yes.
Well, yeah, he'll join us in a couple of hours, and he'll be ready to rock with some tremendous information on Bills Mafia. And last time I checked, the Bills were 3.5-point favorites. And I think it'll be a tight game, man. Like, the Bills have not been great. You know, they've been surviving. They've won the last two games. They've been surviving, yes. And the Pats, last time we saw them was in Minnesota, where they were very undisciplined in the fourth quarter, and they allowed Kirk Cousins to get a win in primetime, which would drive Belichick nuts for a week. But it really says something about the legacy of Belichick that it feels like it's more about him tonight against the Bills than anyone else, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not about Mac Jones. It's not about – it's how does Belichick find a way to rattle the cage of Josh Allen and the Bills? And it'll be a fascinating matchup. I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out.
Agreed. I think – but Carlo – is Carlo doing it over the phone or over Skype, because he has to wear his helmet?
I'm not sure.
One of my favorite thing to do is when the Bills collapse and something really bad happens to them, I know he's in – like a garage in Woodbridge with his buddies. I FaceTime him immediately. And the look on that guy's face. Like, Hayes, I know you like the Packers, but I think if the Packers crap the bed, you don't rip your shirt off and you walk upstairs and grab something to eat and then go to bed or whatever you do.
Right, exactly.
You don't care enough to freak out. This guy gets so mad, and that's what I always love about fandom. He feels personally insulted. Like, they screwed me over, and I've never understood that about being a super fan. It's like,
wow,
move on from it.
I get it. Listen, I get the fandom. I understand having a connection and having a desire. The regular season can be difficult, I find, to get to that level. Like, playoff defeats are incredibly grueling, you know, and just drains you, like, emotionally.
Right.
If you've been invested all year, drains you.
Yes.
But I can't get to that point where I'm, you know, ripping shirts or throwing stuff around, breaking TVs. Like, I can't figure out if those videos that go viral of guys, like, literally punching their TV off the wall.
Lighting the jersey on fire in the fire pit.
That wasn't spontaneous, was it? Or was that just simply knowing, hey, video this, and then we'll throw it on TikTok, and a million people are going to see it?
Wasn't there some Philadelphia Eagles fan, some big dude, that would make videos that would just lose his mind, and they would go viral? Because he's like, it was actually quite funny. It was almost like he was a comedian. But I found those entertaining because he would absolutely lose it. I find that entertaining.
Yeah.
But to really have the deep hurt, I don't really get that.
It's tough, again, during the regular season. But, like, football's a different beast.
Regular season, it's tough to lose your mind, unless it's something crazy. Or if you had money in it, or you have something invested, you and your friends have bet on something, or, you know, you're a diehard fan of this, and your best buddy is a diehard fan of that team, and you're going head-to-head. It's bragging rights, all of that, and something crazy happens. I understand the emotion of it, but I always find – I agree with you, Hayes. I always find during the regular season, like, there's no emotion. Like, it's just kind of, all right.
Yeah, it's fun. Like, if you're there, you know, obviously you're going there hoping to see a win, and you're hoping to see goals or points or whatever, some sort of – infraction possibly that will allow for an emotional roller coaster. But the idea of being at home on the couch watching a regular season game and freaking out, that is an extreme that I'm not at, but I understand why people get there. And there's a part of me that's like, you know what, I really appreciate it, and I almost envy it in a way, because regular season games get your heart rate going that fast. You know, you're so jacked up for it. So Canada is done. They're out. You asked me to describe it in one word, their World Cup experience. I used the word disappointing. Let's bring in our main man, James Duthie. Duthie's been on the ground in Qatar for weeks now. JD, now that it's over, now that Canada's played three matches, they've lost all three, how would you describe their World Cup experience?
I think that's fair, Hayes, what you said. I don't think that we should, you know, rip people that say, you know, I don't think it's a loser mentality or anything like that to say, you know, if you're satisfied that, you know, it was Canada's first time here and the experience and all that. I think you can kind of get away with that because it has been 36 years and the program was so awful for so long. But having said that, the thing that really tempers any, you know, making the compliments too large here is A, one of two teams to lose all three games. But I said this on the air, Luke and the guys ranked Canada 24th out of the teams in the tournament. And if you go look at all the teams below them in the rankings, let's say outside of Qatar, every one of those teams had at least one big result. You know, Australia got through, Costa Rica pulled up an upset, Tunisia beat France, Saudi Arabia beat Argentina. And so I think that, you know, why not Canada? Yeah, maybe they got a bit of a bad group as far as pulling off a result like that, but I think in retrospect, Belgium was probably pretty beatable. So I think it's fair to say that's disappointing that, you know, at least, you know, one win or a result was probably there for them. And when you're one of only two teams that goes 0-3, then disappointing is 100% fair.
Jimmy, you had a lot of material with the Herdman comments. I'm sure you love that because you had 3 days of panels about it. But talking to your panelists, your fellow panelists, and like, what did they have to say about the job he did as far as handling the team, positions, the structure, all of that, the job he did with the team on the pitch?
I think they were pretty critical. And, you know, I think it's fair. It's hard for me to look at, like, Kevin and Julian and Janine. Those guys have far more expertise than me. So, but I think what's interesting for John is that this is the first time he's really had any criticism. Like, everything he did with the women's program was pretty much magic. Mm-hmm. Since he's been with the men's program for 4 years, they hadn't even lost two in a row. Every move he made turned to gold. The players all loved him, and they went on this magical run to make it here. And I think he had a rough last week. You know, the comments, I've blown out of proportion, but Croatia made it a big deal, so it is a story. And I think tactically, again, if you listen to our experts, I think they, and even, you know, layman like perhaps us watching football, you could say they needed somebody else in the midfield against that Croatian midfield. It seemed pretty obvious. And I think even the tactics to start this game and some of the lineup choices can be criticized. I don't think you can rip the guy and say he blew the World Cup, not whatsoever, and he deserves a lot of credit for getting them there. But, you know, he's a big boy, and he knows when you're on the stage, it's not just, oh, we belong, happy to be here. You're going to open yourself to criticism. So that's one of the good parts about getting here to this stage is now if Canada is going to be treated seriously, then you have to criticize these things. And so I don't think he had the greatest tournament, frankly, but it's, you know, first time on the stage. And has he still done an amazing job to get them here? Yes.
Jimmy, if you were sitting around talking with the people that you worked with the last 2 weeks and they discussed the possibilities of 4 years from now, the results being, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to go as far as saying drastically different, but the results being better, which is not hard to do, than this year, 4 years from now, what would they say?
I think they have a long way to go. And like I said, there was encouraging things from this tournament, guys, but like that, you know, 30 or so minutes when they were completely dominated by Croatia in the first 30 minutes here, I think the gap looks still pretty big. And we talked about a lot in the pregame and the postgame. There's still a lot of issues here. So now you got 4 years. You know, qualification is stressful for fans, but it's also an incredible blessing where the team's together a lot and you're improving and improving. How are you going to get Alfonso Davies and Jonathan David to come over and play a friendly against Costa Rica? You've already qualified. So the next 4 years are going to pose all sorts of problems. And there are problems in depth in the system, which you saw with Canada. You know, they had 7-8 really good players, and then they had some real issues beyond that.
How's
and
that going to change,
that you
though,
can
Jimmy?
Suddenly develop a next wave of players in 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, those guys should be 20, 21 years old. And look, I'll make the hockey comparison because that's what we do most of the time with you guys and on this show. You know the guys, you know, the Connor Bedards and such that are coming. And with soccer in Canada, you know, I kept asking Julie, okay, who's the next guys coming? And they didn't really have any names for me. You know, there are academies in Vancouver and Toronto and Montreal that most of the good players go to, but it's not like there's this crop of 12 players that are going to be ready to step in 2026. So I think that's the big issue. They should do better because all their young players are going to be right in the middle of their prime. They're probably going to get a much better draw. Like, Canada should win its first ever World Cup game in 2026, even if they're not that much better, because, not to get into too much detail, but when the hosts get in that top pod when it comes to the draw. So, in all likelihood, Canada is going to be in a pod of three teams. One of them will be ranked 17th to 32 in the world. One of them will be ranked 33 to 48 in the world. So, they should win a game. You know, it's not going to be Croatia and Belgium again for them. So they should get lucky that way, but are they going to be that much better? I'm not sure.
All right, so overall, get away from the soccer talk. We saw some pictures of you online.
Yeah, the camel one.
Yeah, I mean, there was a right arm flex on top of a camel. There was one with a sunset in the background.
Yeah, that's the one we're curious about. Like the sunset one, where you were on the phone, couldn't have been your phone. So who did you ask to take that picture of you in the middle of the desert? And they had to kneel down in the sand.
Okay, hold on here. First of all, I am very guilty of being a photo flexer. This is something I've done for a long period of time.
Look at this loser. You're 57 years old. Who took that picture?
I'm holding on, buddy. It's the same with the medium. I didn't even get the youth medium golf shirts, which was a disappointment for this trip for me.
You didn't answer the question. Who took that picture with the
puffy, for sure?
No, nothing posed whatsoever. I was doing the First Up show. That photo was taken by,
Qatarian photographer.
Our president, Stuart Johnston. Stuart Johnston took the photo and sent it to me. I was not even aware he took the photo. That was pure au naturel sunset magic. And you guys,
I will ask Mr. Johnston if that's true, but I don't believe that.
He's our next guest. He's our next guest.
Took the photo.
Yeah, we'll have to corroborate that. That's a tough one for us to challenge right now, but we'll have to find a way to get in touch with him and make sure that we corroborate that, because it's a great pick.
We've had this discussion before. I don't know, like the Instagram experts in our TSN family, Matthew Schinetti, Kayla is amazing at it. They seem to have photographers that follow them everywhere they go.
That, like, Matthew Schinetti's thumbs are going to fall off after the Instagram pics that he took.
Schinetti has like artistic level photography of him on the sidelines every game. And I've worked with him for 2 weeks. I haven't even asked him who takes these shots.
Yeah.
So now I'm just going to have Stu Johnson follow me around.
There you go. That's what you need. We all need someone just to take our picture every once in a while and make us look as good as possible. Well, great job over there, James.
Really drunk fans walking by me that are wondering why I'm talking so loud. And I'm having... So
say hi for us.
Thank you. Have a great night. Sorry.
There's nobody there. We got to go, buddy.
All right, James. Safe travels back, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you, buddy.
Okay, guys.
There's James Duthie. I think he's had enough of guitar.
Yeah, he's had enough. He doesn't want to do anything. He needs to come home and lie on a couch for 10 days.
He's been over there for a while. He's got the World Juniors on the horizon. There's a lot going on. Yeah. But listen, the panel, everyone over there did a great job in Canada. Listen, it was a reality check. That's what it was. It was a reality check. CONCACAF was an amazing run. But when the rest of the world shows up to play, Canada's at the bottom of the bunch, man. And we got a lot of work to do. And to his point, when you're wondering, well, who's going to be here in 4 years? We don't have that answer. Like, what you got now is likely what you'll have, and guys will show up. Like, that's what happens. There will be players that will develop and show up and get better. But, you know, 4 years, it'll come quick, and then we'll be back at it, and it'll be on home soil. So thanks again to James Duffy. All right, Carlo Quagliacomo coming up, Steve Tasker coming up, Pierre LeBrun, Al's brother still to come with the pick tonight. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, we have a pair of tickets to give away. Leafs Flames, December 10th, every day this week. We will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player, and on Friday you'll have a chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue, the fourth of the week, this former Maple Leaf has reached the 20-goal mark twice in his NHL career.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I thought it was a bust.
Yeah, these clues are going the opposite way now.
Yeah.
Now, tomorrow's clue will be, tomorrow's clue will be this Maple Leaf was just inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what? Yeah. I don't know where
if
this
we
is
ever
going.
Do a clue one more another time saying this guy was a bust, and I got a buddy that was a Leafs first-round pick, and I said, if it's that guy, you better change it because I'm not supporting this show or that comment, if that is the truth.
What, did he score 20 multiple times?
No, it wasn't that guy, so I didn't care anymore.
Oh, okay. Then who cares? It's a different bust, so we're cool with that. Hey, listen, bust is harsh. I get
bust
it.
Bust is
it's a harsh comment.
Well, how are you a bust if you scored 20 goals a couple times? I know that's not exactly longevity or sustained success, but...
I guess bust within the Leaf organization. Like, clearly he moved on somewhere else.
Or they made a bust of you outside. Maybe it's a statue worthy.
Maybe
it's Legends Row. We got to get into this Luongo nonsense out there. I don't know if you've heard.
Yeah, so
about
he's
that.
Going up into the Ring of Honor, right?
He
in
should
Vancouver.
Be his number should be retired.
Yeah,
you don't put him in the Ring of Honor. Like,
so is that the controversy? Because I couldn't figure it out. If they just don't want him honored at all, or if it's not he hasn't been honored enough. I mean, what's your read on that situation?
My read is that I believe, like, he should be on the same level as Pavel Bure with them, and he's not. That's what concerns me. So Pavel
it's
Bure.
It's not concerning, Jamie. It's just stupid.
It's
stupid. When you've had the ups and downs, you've got a free nugget to give, a free golden nugget to give to the fans. Roberto announced that his number's coming up when he's in town this week. Yeah. And next year you could retire his jersey, but you're too dumb to figure that out. I don't know why you can't figure that out.
Well, so they're doing the Ring of Honor instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, teams do
that.
Like,
would it really kill you to put him in to retire? But, like,
yeah, I don't know. But the Sedin's numbers are going to get retired, but Luongo's not. And I know the Sedin's were there longer, but if Pavel Bure and Luongo were there exact same amount of time, and I would argue they're both in the Hall of Fame, so why wouldn't Luongo's?
But it's just some guy sitting somewhere pinching pennies saying, nah, he's not quite going to get his jersey retired. Like, what are you talking about, man?
Yeah. I don't know. We need more context because we should get more information.
I'm kind of curious about the read on that out in Vancouver as well. Hour two coming up. Steve Tasker on Bills, Pats, back into the Leaf win. The Raptors loss. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.